97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors, the new and improved version of the show. Second Amendment Radio is always going to be about guns and gun laws and gun rights and Second Amendment stuff. But we are also going to, and we already did this anyway, but we're now just going to sort of officially expand the show into talking about fishing and hunting and camping and sportsman stuff and outdoor stuff. So that's going to be a new part of the show, and we appreciate you joining us for the show. Today, we've got a great one for you. First, the return of my long-lost brother from another mother, Aaron Tarlow, the owner of Southern Armory. It's been like a month since I've seen you, since you've been on the show. It's ridiculous.
4 weeks.
It's been gone
since
for so long.
Since the format changed.
Yeah, I know.
Said, you're here every 4 to 6 weeks. We'll roll with it.
We need to have you here more than that, for sure. What's happening at Southern Armory?
Well, Glocktober was awesome. The wife was like, man, this was a good event. You know, we did a lot of Blue Label stuff, lots of orders coming in, lots of satisfied customers. So that's always a giant plus. I've been working out the schedule for the upcoming defensive pistol classes and CCW classes and stuff. And a lot of people have been like, hey, what's this defensive pistol? Like, I don't know if I'm that advanced. And it's like, it's just like kind of a... the next step after you get your basic pistol, which you got to remember, your basic pistol is just your CCW class.
Right.
You know, that's just, you know, your six steps of marksmanship and cleaning and care and safe storage and ammo. And then we kind of jump into that where here's a holster, you know, we're going to shoot at some different distances. We're going to do a little bit more. We have a FAT simulator, our training simulator, which is a great tool. You guys use that in law enforcement, don't you, Sheriff?
Well, yeah, Sheriff Dave Marshak from Jefferson County is here as well, going to be joining us for the entire show. So we got a good one today.
The FAT simulator, Firearms Training Simulator, puts the participants of that next level class, right, in the home invasion, the carjacking, the robbery in, you know, convenience store, bank, you know, wherever you're at. So we use that a little bit. Then we go to the range and we do some failures, you know, just more failures. You learn failures in the CCW class, but then we do more failures in the next class.
It doesn't matter how good you think you are or how long you've been shooting or how long you've been a gun owner.
Yeah.
It's always a good idea to get a little bit of extra training. Yeah. I mean, that goes for law enforcement too, right, Sheriff? I mean... it's always good to have a refresher course in that kind of stuff.
The reality is, for firearms, these are perishable skills. And so they are perishable skills for law enforcement, and they are for a homeowner or somebody that is a CCW holder. You know, the more that you handle the firearm, the more proficient you are, and the more you shoot, the better you are at hitting your target.
Absolutely.
So they're all perishable skills. And, you know, to be proficient, you need to keep up and maintain that training.
Yep. So I got a funny story that kind of adds some credibility to what the sheriff's saying. After I got done with my paramedic license, I said, hey, maybe I can start shooting again. So one of my buddies and I went down to the gun club, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to clear this plate rack in six rounds because there's six-inch targets, you know, we're at 25 yards. And I'm like, miss, miss, miss. I'm looking at the gun like, what is wrong with this thing? and then I finally was like, all right, hold on, think about this, Aaron. Okay. Ping, 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 you know, but I had to, like, physically think, where before it was just, like, an extension of my hand. I could just point it.
Right.
And I could knock down what I wanted, you know, effortlessly.
Right.
And then, you know, I mean, we've been back out since, and now I'm back to where I was, you know, when I was shooting matches a lot.
But that's you, a gun store owner, a person who teaches CCW, who shoots all the time, who still need, if a professional athlete didn't play the sport or practice for a period of time, even though they're the best of the best, they would be rusty. They would need...
And I'll point out, you know, you have the preseason for hockey and you have preseason for baseball,
right,
where they play, you know, for a few months prior and they play a bunch of games. So it's the same thing for firearms owners. You need to get out. And the firearms training simulator is great because... and my daughter's getting into zombies, by the way.
Oh, cool.
That's a proud dad moment, too.
Nice.
And so we got a new update. And my wife's like, yeah, go in there and check it out. So I was in there and, you know, the zombies, where do you got to shoot a zombie? In the head, right? So, I'm just saying.
Blow their arms and legs off. That's not going to do
anything. Right, yeah. And my other thing is double tap, right? So I'm in there with another buddy. He's an EMT. And he works here in St. Louis. And he's in there and he's shooting, you know, and he's like, how do you think you're going to do? I'm like, I don't know. He got like 40 of like the 50 targets, right? And he used like 130 rounds. And so I'm like, I don't know. We'll see. So I ended up getting like 48
nice.
And used about the same number of rounds, but I was double tapping every one of them in the head. He's just looking at me. He kept telling me, he's like, this gun's off. This gun's off. And I'm like, I don't know. We'll see. Wait for me to get up. I was like, I don't think it's off, buddy.
I've never practiced zombie shooting.
No, you need to come in and do
that.
Yeah.
I've never practiced zombie shooting. Yeah. I will tell you, though, that as a an extension of the conversation and those firearm skills being perishable, I will tell you that it also comes down to muscle memory. It does for law enforcement. And if you're a CCW holder and you're switching up holsters from time to time, you know, you're going to resort back to that muscle memory. And during a critical incident, it's even more important. And switching those holsters and not having a good grasp of what it is that, you know, your brain's telling your fingers to do to pull that firearm could end up in some deadly consequences or valuable time that's lost. And so just to reinforce that, you know, the need for that practice and the training, even if you're, you know, unholstering to shoot at zombies, you know, to maintain consistency on that holster, you're going to be in a much better situation when it comes to, you know, retrieving your firearm.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing too, in this class, like this is the first time some people even put a holster on. So you're going through all the steps where, you know, you grip it and then you either, some have like a paddle release, some have a, like what you got on the Serpa where you got a trigger finger release. And you know, you're pulling it straight up and then you're pressing it out. And so a lot of these people just need like the breakdown, like, hey, these are the steps of firing, you know, drawing from a holster. These, just like when we taught you, like, these are the steps of shooting a pistol, right? So really, you know, come and learn. And, you know, I love seeing when people are like notebooking it, like they're taking notes. I'm like, yeah, perfect. Cause now you can go home and you've got all your notes and everything else. So we have a lot of people come through that class multiple times. It's, you know, it's really kind of, I thought it was weird at first, you know, seeing the same faces all the time. And I'm like, okay,
that's,
you know,
good,
they
though.
They just want it.
Yeah.
They just want a perspective. And then sometimes they come to the class and then I'll see them in the shop and they're getting in the firearms training simulator and they're like, hey, can you come in here for a minute? I'm like, yeah, what's going on? Is it broken? And they're like, no. Can you just watch me? I'm like, sure.
Yeah.
Shop slow. What's going on? You know, so they get like a little impromptu.
It's like a hitting coach going into a batting cage with somebody.
And they get like a little impromptu lesson.
Watch me swing. See what I'm doing wrong. Right.
And, you know, we do the same thing in the shop with new gun owners. Like, hey, this is how you grip it. Like, you know, how does it feel? Is it comfortable in your hands? Can you press the trigger? Can you react the slide? Before you even sell them a gun. So even when they come in and they're just trying to purchase a gun for the first time, they're getting like a basic pistol lesson.
That's awesome.
On, you know, stance and grip and trigger control and sight alignment, sight picture and follow through and everything else. So, and if you don't know what those things were, I just named off, you need to come in. So we can go over them with you. And then all of our participants have to have a holster, have to have snap caps, and we have all that stuff in store. And the snap caps are great because we're setting up double feeds, you know, and depending on what gun you carry, double feeds happen. Not with Glock. Glock's perfect. Glock 19, baby. or Dan Wesson 1911. Have yet to have that happen on that gun. Other guns, yes.
Well, hopefully you refuse to sell them cheap ammunition.
Right.
If I have one pet peeve, it's
the hard primers.
It is cheap ammunition because I can tell you I've taught hundreds of people in CCW, and they will show up to the range, and everybody has different guns that they were loaned, or
they all have the white box.
The cheapest ammunition possible, and we start having issues right off the bat. So I hope you have quality ammunition.
Knocking another brand, but there's another brand that's in a black box, maybe from a foreign country. And lots of hard primers in that, too. And so you have to explain people, like, yeah, that box is a dollar less. You can buy it at this big, you know, big box store. I guess you could buy it at the big box store. I don't think they're selling it anymore. Thank you, by the way.
Yeah, no kidding.
We've seen our ammo sales go up. But we don't carry the cheap ammo. You know, we're carrying the Fiocchi and, like, MagTech, like, good, solid brands. Every time you press trigger, it goes bang. CCI is another great one for, like, for the guys that are, like, in 22s. Like, you know, get CCI. Believe me. You'll thank me later. So, but, yeah, that's – they don't understand that the – okay, so you run the machine faster so you can produce more ammunition. That's the only way you're going to make it cheaper. Then you're bidding out the cheapest primers, the cheapest powders, and the cheapest projectiles. And the primers are always harder, and they have to be harder because you're running the machines faster. You don't want the primers to go off. So then they're like, well, my gun didn't pop the primer. And it's like, yeah, it's a hard primer. Like, they have to be that way. They have to be, you know, pretty heavy-duty components because they're running the machine so fast they don't want anything, you know, going off and blowing the top off a building. And I've had buddies that are manufacturers like small scale. We actually carry one of them in the store. And when I say small scale, I mean like 6-8 machines. And I go over and help them load because I like technical stuff. I like learning. And
yeah.
And there's no better way to get immersed in that atmosphere to be like, oh, that's how you do this. That's how you do that. This is how you spot check stuff. And so, you know, that's how you become super knowledgeable. So I would go over and literally help him load ammo from pistol ammunition to rifle ammunition, even shotgun stuff. And he was like, yeah, I remember when I first started this business like 10 or 12 years ago, he goes, I was running the machine pretty quick. And one of the primers detonated in the tube. And he goes, I was picking components out of the ceiling, the drop ceiling.
Wow.
And I was like, really? He goes, yeah. He goes, it was so loud, I thought somebody was shooting. And I was like, that's insane. But, you know, he had like probably 50 or 100 primers go off.
Yeah. And I think as long as you're willing to either invest in it in yourself, right, to demand quality.
Yeah.
If you're, you know, if you're a, you know, somebody that does it at your home, but you have the standards to make sure that the primer's always going to go off, that, you know, that round's always going to fire. I think that's a critical piece. And never try to save money when it comes to ammunition.
Right.
So whether you do it yourself or whether you go to a store like Southern Army, you know, pay a little extra, get good ammo. So when you need it to protect yourself, it's going to work. You don't have to worry about it. You have confidence in your weapon. And I think you're going to be out and about and feel a little bit more comfortable with your environment. And
I want to, Chad, I want to wrap this segment just a little bit early because I want to get into some discussions with Aaron and the sheriff in the next segment. I'm going to tell a story that I told last week, but there was no law enforcement person here when I told the story last week. And so I really want to get Sheriff Marshak's thoughts on a personal story that happened to me. Also, I've known Aaron for so long and done this show with him for so long that I wanted you to be here whenever I told this story, too. So I want to get your thoughts on it as well. Before we go to break,
just finish up a couple things.
What's happening. Like you said, I know Glocktober's over, but Glocktober's, Black Friday's right around the corner.
Black Friday's coming up. So that's we always do the buy a gun, get a free CCW class or defensive pistol class. Then on Cyber Monday,
we set
the website up so you guys can come in if you don't need a firearm. Mind you, firearm, we can special order. We don't have to have it in stock. We're happy to do whatever. And then Cyber Monday comes up. We're closed on Mondays, but you can still get on the website and book a CCW class. I think we do those normally 50% off, so we're going to continue that and for Cyber Monday. So
awesome.
That is coming up, and you'll hear the advertisements on 97.1. You know, that week before and then the week of for like 6 days straight. So,
Where's Southern Armory?
9901. Hold on. It's been like 4 weeks. Give me a second.
Right?
Southern Armory, located 1 mile east of 270 and 44, 9901 Watson Road and SouthernArmory.com.
SouthernArmory.com.
That's SouthernArmory.com.
Oh, wow, nobody forgot the roundabout. Oh, man, that was rough. All right, so if you were listening to last week's show, you know my tree trimming story. If you weren't, you're going to hear it for the first time, and I'm so glad that Sheriff Marshak is here because I want to get the law enforcement perspective of what happened to me just a couple weeks ago in my own backyard. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Second Amendment Radio and The Great Outdoors on 97.1 FM Talk. Welcome back to Second Amendment Radio and The Great Outdoors, 97.1 FM Talk. Producer Chad Ellis, Aaron Tarlow, the owner of Southern Armory, Sheriff Dave Marshak from Jefferson County, all in studio. Got a great show for you. So glad you are listening. If you missed anything from that first segment, or you want to just hear it again, or you want to make sure that you don't miss anything on Second Amendment Radio, make sure you download our podcast absolutely free. Best way to do so is on the radio.com app, which has the brand new Radio Rewind feature, which is super cool. So if you are listening to live radio, if you're streaming the station live on the radio.com app, you can now rewind live radio, kind of like watching TV with a DVR. Super cool stuff. You can rewind, I think, as far back as 24 hours. And then, of course, if you missed anything, you can, and it's been more than 24 hours, you can always download the podcast of Second Amendment Radio or any of the other shows here on 97.1 right there off of the radio.com app. Super, super cool stuff. So, here's my story.
All right, hit me with it.
So it's been, now this was a couple Sundays ago now, I guess.
So you did something fun on a Sunday and you didn't invite me. That's fine.
I was cutting the grass. I was cutting the grass. It was more mulching leaves than I was cutting grass. But if anybody knows me, I have a little bit of OCD, and I may start a job, and then that job will sort of go down a rabbit hole and become a second job and a third job and a fourth job. So I was mulching leaves, and it was later in the afternoon. This was, I think, right before the time change, so it wasn't getting dark at 5 o'clock. It was getting dark at 6 o'clock. And so it was getting close to 6 o'clock as I was wrapping up my my leaf mulching. And in my backyard, along my back fence line, I have these massive bushes. They're like almost like a tree-bush hybrid. They're 10 feet tall. They look like big trees almost, but when you get up underneath them, it's not like they have individual trunks. It's like a bunch of different vines. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of dead branches up under there. And so I saw a couple of them sticking out, and I went up under there with a trimmer and cut out a couple dead branches. And then, but once then I was up underneath there, I saw a whole bunch more. So it's getting dark. And so I go back into my garage and I get a headlamp from our buddy. I got an Intervine from Flashlight Mike, Intervine headlamp. And I've got headphones on because I'm listening to a podcast. I had been cutting the grass, and so I usually am listening to a podcast or something when I'm cutting the grass. And then guy behind me has a dog that is constantly barking, especially if you're anywhere near the fence. And I was literally right on the back fence line. So it's a whole lot better than listening to this dog bark and, you know, in my ear the whole time. So I've got my headphones on. I've got my headlamp on. And I'm up under my trees, and I'm trimming these branches. And I'd probably been doing it for at least a half an hour. I mean, it was a lot. Once I got underneath there, like I said, it just got out of control, OCD. I'm trimming every dead branch I can find. And so I've been doing this for a while, and then suddenly I hear a human voice.
Yeah.
I think I hear a human voice over the headphones and the dog and everything.
Yeah.
And so I take the headphones out, and I say, "Hello?" And I'm literally, I mean, I'm like crouched underneath branches. Right. I mean, I can't see a thing.
Out. Yeah.
And, you know, I'm just deep in this mess of branches and vines and everything else. And I say, "Hello?" And no response. And I say it again. I say, "Hello?" And I hear, "You're about to get shot." And I mean, I'm in my backyard trimming branches, right? And so I say, "Excuse me?" He says, and I hear this voice, "You're about to get shot." And I said, "Well, you better hit me because I shoot back."
Yeah.
And he says, "What are you doing?" And I said, I'm trimming my tree branches. He goes, I've been hollering at you for 5 minutes. And I said, "Well, I got headphones on." And he says, "You better take your headphones off or you're going to get shot." And I said, "I don't think it's against the law to wear headphones." And I said, "In my backyard?"
Right.
And then I hear a woman, I guess his wife, this was the neighbor catty corner to me.
Yeah.
Because I was kind of in the back corner of my house.
Yeah.
And she says, "Well, you got a flashlight on in the dark." Again, I don't think there's anything wrong with what I'm doing.
Not illegal.
So we kind of get into a little bit of an argument, and he's like, "You need to keep your headphones off, or you're gonna get yourself in a bad situation or something." And you know, I can't remember exactly the words said. But anyway, he ends up, you know.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I end up saying, I can't see anything. I'm up underneath these tree branches. I don't even. I assume who he is because of where his voice is coming from. But I never even see this guy. And I've never even talked to this neighbor.
Well, you're going to talk to him
This is why it's good to have these conversations, right?
So
we can just say, don't be that guy.
Right?
I'm with
you. Okay. So now I have all kinds of questions in my head. Because, one, I didn't have a gun on me. The gun was in the house.
The shotgun?
And
That's really hard to stuff
right,
out.
Yeah, 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 I don't have, yeah, the guy, I don't have a gun on me while I'm trimming trees.
Probably time to take
mulching
one.
Leaves. But I'm thinking after all this happens, you know, my adrenaline is up. I'm kind of pissed because I'm in my own backyard doing yard work.
Caffeine
and suddenly
helps with that, by the way.
Feel like I'm getting threatened, you know, not feel like, suddenly
you,
I'm
you
being
were.
Threatened
yeah.
With being shot. And so I start thinking, I start going through all these different scenarios in my mind.
Yeah.
Like, what if? I would have had a gun on me? What if I decided to shoot him? What if, you know, like, what did he break a law by saying that to me?
I don't know about saying
how that, far could I have got, like, what could I have done at that point if I did have my gun on me? Like, Sheriff, how I can laugh about it now, but in all honesty, how dangerous of a situation were he and I suddenly in when he tells me, take your headphones off because you're going to get shot?
You know, I think let's as the context that you shared it with me, and that's what I have to respond
sure.
to based
uh-huh.
on what you're telling me.
Sure, sure.
Definitely diffuse the situation, right? You already said that you weren't armed. You're on your own property. You're not in a tactical advantage to win anything at that point. You can't see anything. You're up, you know, trimming bushes.
And you got a headlight on.
Yeah. I think, tactically, you're not in the best position, of course. Often I would just say cooler heads prevail, right? We're talking about a neighbor. Let things calm down and then go back and address it just so you know, comfortably you're not going to have to deal with the situation again. And that's probably my best remedy for it. I don't know that you should have to arm yourself to, trim some bushes in
right.
your own yard.
Right.
And I don't think that you should feel insecure. I don't know that you should feel
fenced-in property, by the way.
Exactly.
It's not like I'm even...
It's not fair. But we don't know... just to put it in context, we don't know anything about your neighbor based on what you know.
Sure.
Was this a mental health situation? Is the spouse familiar with deterioration of a mental health issue?
Mm-hmm.
You don't know those things.
Well, he said to me that they've had some problems around here lately, and he just wanted to make sure that... And now, if he'd been paying attention... I had been laying on the ground for 30 minutes
yeah.
underneath trees.
And doing yard work.
So if I was up to I was up to no good, I don't think I'd been spending 30 minutes
in
underneath a tree.
Yeah, that's a little weird.
I wasn't moving around anybody's backyards or homes or anything like that. So if he observed me for as long as he said he did.
Right. It's definitely atypical, right? It's not I wouldn't think it'd be a common situation, but I would think if you could diffuse that situation that you don't have a good advantage, you already said the weapon's not on you. How are you going to defend yourself? Even if you push him right to the next level,
I wasn't even in a position where I could stand
it
up.
There's a lot of crazy. We talk about this with firearms. You almost have to have more discipline oftentimes,
right.
And in these situations. And the reality is you could escalate the situation by encouraging
mm-hmm.
a more robust response from him.
So maybe
I would just diffuse the situation.
Maybe when I said, you better hit me because I shoot back, was not the best thing.
Yeah, probably not the greatest
thing. I don't think it was the best one.
I was terrified at that moment.
Right.
I was like, I was scared. It was the first thing that I said after he said, you're about to get... I hear is, you're about to get shot.
Yeah.
And I had never... Well, maybe not never, but it's been a long time since I've heard somebody say those words, and I certainly was caught off guard, and like you just illustrated, Sheriff, I was in a very vulnerable position. I couldn't even see where this
was
coming from in the dark, and I hear somebody say you're about to get shot,
yep.
and, it scared me.
So the other thing I'll say, and I tell people this pretty regularly, is, confrontation is not necessarily a great thing. Like, if you think there's a crime being perpetrated, let's say, you think there's somebody trying to break in your neighbor's house, the cops are certified, right? So you can call 911 and say, hey, I think somebody's trying to break in my neighbor's house, and the cops will show up.
Right.
And, if you give a description of the suspect, they'll stop the suspect and they'll question the suspect, etc. So, in
What's
that case...
What's the suspect look like?
Right, yeah.
He's a light dancing around in the backyard.
Yeah, he's in a bush.
He's on his own property. I think that would, if I was going to offer one more thing, I think it's, look, I'm on my own property.
Yeah.
If there was confusion about the
yard
property
work.
Line.
Yeah.
But it is a scary... Listen, based on what you described, it's a scary situation. And there are overzealous people...
Everywhere.
That possess firearms,
mm-hmm.
and that's why we always talk about that discipline component. Yep. Don't necessarily, unnecessarily interject yourself into a situation.
Absolutely.
And introduce that firearm into a situation that it doesn't need to be there.
Right.
And that's where the discipline comes
mm-hmm.
in. And if I came across your neighbor, I would offer some good quality advice in that arena and tell him that it's not necessary to confront every single,
right.
Possible perceivable threat out there. Sometimes you have to use discipline.
Right. And it could have just been like, hey, man, what are you doing in that bush? And you could have been like, oh, I'm trimming it up because I see all these dead things in here.
Well, we all know that
right.
there have, like you just said, both of you just said, there are overzealous people, especially these days in the climate that we're in. And I could again, as I'm sitting there and I'm rewinding it in my head after it was over with, and I'm thinking about all the different things that could have happened. I mean, if I would have had a gun on me, I wouldn't have shot. You know, that's just not who I am. I wouldn't. It wouldn't. We were nowhere near that line, as far as I'm personally concerned. But
he might.
You're not going to tell me that there weren't that there aren't people. Well, and you're not going to. I know for sure that there are other people in this world.
Yeah.
That if that would have happened to them, they would have said, "Well, I now feel like my life is in danger,
absolutely.
And I'm on my own property."
Yeah.
I could see people saying. I have every right to defend myself.
So now
you're in a
Mexican standoff. They've got guns on you, and you've got guns on them.
And just talking about that discipline, you know, I had a situation where I was traveling. I was with a couple of buddies. We were getting ready to bow hunt, and I was pulling a large trailer, and somebody pulled into the gas station, and an individual thought I had cut him off. And,
yeah.
And I didn't see him. And, you know, he pulled up to the gas pumps to explain to me how he thought about our interaction, you know, via the traffic.
And describe.
And you know, honestly.
Let you know how
so
he felt about you as
you know,
a person.
I was armed. My car door was open. There's OC, you know, spray there.
That's a great component to carrying your
right
car,
there,
by the way.
Next to the left. I had a firearm on me. I am with two really good shooters. One of them used to be a professional athlete. He's, you know, 6'6".
Oh, is this your undersheriff?
And, and he's a captain with us.
Oh, captain.
And,
okay.
You know, I felt very comfortable in my environment, but I didn't push it. You mm-hmm. know, I mean, he was clearly upset. He was having an issue, and he was sharing his thoughts with me. And I went on about my business. And but I use that example to share with you. You know, I'm with two other police officers. Everybody's physically fit. We weren't going to lose a fight, right?
Yeah.
And so, but. Again, we diffused the situation. We went on about our business, pretend it didn't really bother us, and you know, and so I think there's those times in which you know you have to have the discipline even more so and be responsible to diffuse a situation and de-escalate it, then take it to the next level, even when you're probably legally justified to
use that deadly force.
Right,
and that's the other thing too is de-escalation is such a big component. And then the other thing that we preach too, even in the advanced classes, is avoidance. You know, which is, you know, it's like, hey, you know, like in your case, you know, you pull up to the gas pump, this guy pulls up beside you, and you know, maybe there's been a, you know, I accidentally cut him off or whatever. Could you go to another gas station? Just, you know, stay in the car and go down to the next one and let him. And then if he starts following you, then it's more he's escalating it.
Sure.
Then both of you turn it in the same place at the same time. And I know I've done that before when I've been driving. It's like, man, I think this car's following me. And then, you know, I go and do my classic three lefts or four lefts. You know, where I live, that's just more of a triangle, so it's really three lefts. But, you know, and we come back to the exact same intersection, and it's like, yeah, this guy's following me.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not the paranoia, you know. And then you got some choices to make. Like, you can go to a well-lit area, you can call the cops and have them try to intercept you, you can go to a police station. Fire stations are real good, too. There's always guys with axes in fire stations. I wonder why that is.
You just don't know what the mindset is these days for that other person.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah.
You're coming to it with your perspective of what you think somebody would do, but that may be a completely other scenario. You have no idea what kind of day this person's,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you were the final straw, right? I mean, and so that's the perspective that you need to keep things in.
Yeah, right? Something on something super minor, you know, like cut somebody off, or I went out of turn at the four-way stop or whatever, and, you know, as far as you know, they got served earlier that day, you know, to be divorced from their wife of 30 years mm-hmm. or their kid died or whatever, a family member died. So, yeah, it could be just something super simple that's way blown up in their head, I agree. But, yeah, escalation, de-escalating it, and avoidance, I think, are two big keys.
Look, and that's got to come up in a civil court, right? Just like it does for law enforcement, as a private citizen, you better be prepared,
right,
to justify to law enforcement
why you did it.
Why you took the actions, mm-hmm. why it was necessary for you to take those actions, and then not only have the knowledge of the laws, but you have to understand how civil proceedings are going to work. And, you know, when you're involved in those critical situations defending yourself, I cannot stress this enough. What you say to law enforcement and first responders is critical, and it may make the difference between you ending up in a criminal case, right? Or you just ending up maybe with some a civil issue that you're going to have to deal with. And, you know, in times of crisis, when you're stressed and that heart rate is jacked up.
You say things.
And you say the wrong things that can really make a difference between, you know, fighting for your life and being concerned or, you know, I got the SOB.
Right.
Right. Good point.
And my thing is, I tell people all the time is don't, and this is no offense, Sheriff, but don't talk to the cops. They are there to write reports and make arrests. And you should only release statements through your attorney.
Oh, see, I think you should completely confess to the police whenever they ask anything. And no, just kidding. I don't give that advice.
Yeah. We'll continue this part of the discussion off the air.
I will tell you, these are critical situations. Yeah. I mean, you know, the best advice, and some of my best friends are defense attorneys, you know, you have to have competent representation.
Yes, absolutely.
Police officers need competent representation when they're involved in a shooting, and an average citizen sometimes does as well.
Yep. All right, we got to take a break, but we've got more to go. I'm going to get Sheriff and Aaron's thoughts on some of the bills that have been introduced here in the St. Louis area that will affect some gun rights, and particularly the one about gun dealers. Get Aaron's thoughts on that when we get back. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Second Amendment Radio and The Great Outdoors, 97.1 FM Talk. Well, the debate has already started off the air, so let's do this on the air.
Welcome back to Second Amendment Radio. Chad, I don't do this often. Good music today.
Hey, there you go.
I love that organ opening. I'm like, man, I feel like I'm in church. This is awesome.
That's right. So Chad Ellis, producer of The Stars, Aaron Tarlow, the owner of Southern Armory, Jefferson County Sheriff Dave Marshak, all in studio with us. I'm Tony Colombo. You are listening to Second Amendment Radio and The Great Outdoors. And what I wanted to get into, we got one more segment to go on today's show, is this new, there's a couple, we'll see if we have time to get to how many we can get to, but the one I want to talk about the most, it's probably getting the most press, is this new law that's being proposed in the city of St. Louis that would require gun store dealers, gun dealers, to turn into police any failed background checks. Aaron is the owner of Southern Armory. Name is Aaron Tarlow, the owner. I almost said the owner of Southern Tarlow. That's not right at all. But anyway, you own a gun store.
I do.
What do you think of the idea of having to turn over to police anytime somebody fails a background check at your store?
There's a couple of things going on here, and we kind of talked about this off the air, but when ATF comes in and does an inspection, which happens every few years for a retail storefront, they actually get we keep a folder for denies. So everybody that gets approved, they go chronologically in order by date and time into a folder, and then if you get denied, it goes into a separate folder, and it's kept same thing, date and time. Mm-hmm. So, but the thing is, you know, we're putting that into the FBI system, so the FBI knows already
when somebody's been denied.
When somebody's been denied, and it's funny because you know I can't prove this per se, but you know I watched ATF do several inspections at Southern Armory, and they would count, right? And then they would go to their separate sheet and look to see, I guess, if that number matched the number that was in the folder, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And then since we number all of our other ones, you know, from whatever to whatever, they would pull like a three-month section, and they would know how many background checks we ran in that 3 months, and then they would look at those to see if those matched the same numbers. If not, they knew that there was a problem in the paperwork somewhere. So I've seen them take copies of our denieds before. And then they've looked at our NFA stuff too. So,
what do they do with it?
So right, and so that's kind of my point is what do they do with it? So my hope is that the ATF field office is putting
Aaron,
all that
let's
in.
Talk.
I know.
Aaron,
I know.
Let's talk.
Hey, I
let's
got my
talk.
Hopes. I got my hopes.
So Sheriff, from the at least from you, I was going to say from a law enforcement standpoint, but at least from your standpoint, what do you think of the idea of gun stores having to call you guys every time somebody gets?
It's fluff. To me, it's fluff legislation,
okay.
Right? I mean, clearly the city of St. Louis has some violent issues. They need to address it. But I don't know that, you know, my question is what's going to happen with this information, right? So you already document it. You already keep it. You transfer it to the ATF.
And the FBI's already got it.
The city of St. Louis, right? That information, you know, through this legislation is going to direct that information to the St. Louis City Police Department that is dealing with record high homicides.
Yes.
They're down a couple of hundred officers at any given time.
Yeah.
You know, they're right short on the road. They have other issues. My question is, what are they going to do with the information? You can gather all you want,
right?
You know, but what is the police department going to do with that information? And I think, in terms of,
doesn't it in your mind
it needs to? You know, we need to address violence in this region.
Doesn't it continue to put the It continues to just kind of paint the picture of
law enforcement's not doing their job.
The reason for gun violence is because of the gun dealer and because of the gun owners, and it's like they're always trying to put limitations on people trying to legally purchase guns. It's never, what are we going to do about the criminals?
Right.
It's part of the narrative. It's part of the narrative that guns are part of the problem. That's what this is, in my opinion. You know, we have a violence issue. Yes, we have a violent issue, violence issues in St. Louis City. But, you know, Jefferson County with, 230,000 people, I would definitely argue that based on our population and our demographics, there's more than 100,000 firearms in Jefferson County, mm-hmm. and I think we've had one or two homicides this year. So
right. It's
not about firearms. I continue to stand by that, and I just don't feel that this legislation is really addressing some of those root causes. I think it's one more thing to put onto a police department that is already stressed,
right?
And that is already struggling to, you know, complete their primary
mission.
It's
feel-good, like you said, fluff. It's feel-good legislation that makes it look like you're doing something, but anybody with any kind of knowledge knows you're really not getting a whole lot of coverage.
And my other question now, because, you know, they want us to report this, right? And they've already got the statistics from the FBI, and the FBI and the ATF are linked. So if the ATF really wanted to do this, they could see, hey, this person's been denied 8 times in the last
week,
2 weeks, whatever. Maybe we should go have a conversation with them. But then, you know, the other people don't realize, too, if you buy more than 2 pistols in a week from the same dealer, really it's any dealer, but generally you don't know, you were just at another store and bought a gun, we have to do a multi-pistol sale. And then we send that to the sheriff or police chief of where they reside. So my question is, like, what do you do with that? Because I know we mail them to Jefferson County. I've got customers in Jefferson County that'll come in and buy a couple of them. My wife will go, hey, we're sending another one down to Sheriff Marshak. And I'll say, okay. And I've never had the thought to send you a text message like, hey, what do you do with these?
They flow into my office, and then they flow into a file cabinet.
The circular bin?
No. We maintain the file. But again, you have to be realistic. And that goes along with any legislation of how are you going to apply it.
Right.
And you can. And so, you know, again, I think it goes back to, you know, I see those files. They come through my desk in my stack of papers. They go to.
What do you guys do with them? You
just file them? Have a person that files them.
Do you computerize them?
No.
Okay.
You know, we have to, again, we don't have those resources.
Right.
And most people don't have extra resources just hanging out to do some of these things. You know, we work on efficiency. We prioritize law enforcement issues, whether, you know, the criminal investigations and calls for service are all prioritized. And, you know, this information coming in, when I look at it from leadership perspective, is what's the correlation between somebody getting rejected who, you know, went to a business, filled out the paperwork, accurately gave their information, and then now was denied. What's the correlation to them going to commit violence? And I haven't seen any real stats or validation that there's a correlation. In terms of how we prioritize our business, I think it would sit low on the totem pole.
So, and the other thing, too, is when you come in and, you know, there's yes and no questions for you who's never done a background check. It's called a 4473. You can Google it, ATF Form 4473, and it'll be yes and no questions. And, you know, the first question is this firearm for you? And if you select yes, then we'll continue to read the yes and no questions. If you select no, then we end the sale right there. And then, you know, other questions like, have you been dishonorably discharged? Are you a felon? Do you have a restraining order? And if you start clicking yes on those, we don't even run it. So it never becomes a deny in the aspect of we ran it through FBI and it got denied. So therefore, under, I guess, the bill they're proposing up here, you know, it would go in a separate folder of just not completed background checks, because we have our approves, we have our denieds, and we have our not completeds. And not completeds are ones that people answered, you know, the yes and no questions wrong, or the people that did the background check and then it expired out because they were like, we ran it, I want that gun, and then we ran it, we're like, you're approved, and then they're like, oh man, I don't know if it's that one, I'm going to come back tomorrow, and then they don't come back for, you know, 30 days and the background check's expired.
You know, and the argument here in the city of St. Louis is that, you know, it's going to somehow curb gun violence. I'm not a St. Louis City resident, so I don't have a huge dog in this fight, other than I haven't seen any correlation between those that have been denied you know, lawful ownership of a firearm, and that those that are out committing crimes with firearms,
so
I don't believe it. And I've worked up in North County for 3 years, many years ago. But the people that I was stopping with firearms weren't the ones that got rejected when they went to a store.
Right.
My thought would be, why don't we just vamp up the gun knowledge? Like, have it mandatory that you take classes to actually learn about guns,
But you're targeting the people who can legally possess them, not the ones who are prohibited possessors.
I mean, say if I did this for a high school, like Missouri high schools, if it's mandatory that you learn about firearms, firearm safety and all this, so it's not, it's just like you had a firearm go off at a university and then kill somebody. You don't have those kind of incidents because you have
knowledge
and you're not trying to,
carry.
I'm going to hide my gun because my parents don't know I have it or something like that. It's more of, okay, we're embracing the guns as well as informing you about them.
So it's kind of like the anti-tobacco campaigns back
then. That stuff does help all the legal owners.
Yeah.
And it may cut down on accidents, like Chad just said.
And it may keep them where they keep the guns locked up.
It's not going to stop crime.
Right. Yeah. But it may keep them where they're locked up. So now you're not getting cars, you know, cars broken into and firearms stolen. And I mean, you're still going to get cars broken into, but, you know, maybe the guns getting stolen get curved a little bit. But, yeah, I think you're just targeting the wrong people. And I don't know how to target the criminal.
Well, and education is never, I mean, we talk about that all the time.
Yeah, education
is never
bad
to have this education.
This is groundbreaking. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm go for it.
We prosecute.
The criminals.
Listen, I know. This is a new concept. It's a new concept.
Lyda Crewson and Bell.
Listen, no names. Here's what I'm telling
you. No names.
That we hold people accountable for their decisions.
I agree.
Regardless of what city or county they're in.
Well,
right?
I want to get your thoughts on one more piece of fluff legislation, and that is this, the other one that was sort of introduced at the same time as the bill that would make gun dealers turn in bad background checks. And that is the $100 fine if you carry a firearm in any city park.
Yeah.
And the idea, the alderman that proposed this said, our families need to know that there are safe places to go and gather and play. And so if we put a $100 fine on anybody carrying a firearm in a city park, that'll make city parks safe.
Couple things. A, I'd have to have an interaction with law enforcement, and that means that they'd have to be like called because there's some kind of reasonable suspicion that I've committed a crime, and then they'd have to search me and find the gun. But since I'm a law-abiding citizen and I don't, you know, interact with people per se, I would probably still carry in a park.
What do they not understand about criminals don't obey the rules?
And then the next thing is criminals don't obey the rules, so they don't care about $100 fine.
Do they know that? Do they know when an alderman says something like, we need to have safe places for our families to go, so we're going to make it illegal to carry in a city park, do they know? Do you think that they know that's just total ridiculous crap that they're saying because bad guys don't follow the law and they just think that it's some fluffy good
feel
sound?
Good.
Or do they really think that that's going to stop crime? And we got like 1 minute. So,
my official response is,
right?
Come on.
It's, I know.
Listen,
it's
not going to fix anything. Mm-hmm. Fluff legislation. I will tell you as we wrap something up real quick, I had a meeting with Senator Whelan yesterday. Good news. I really feel that the mood in the Capitol is not going to address some of this crazy legislation that some of the far left's going to be pushing this next session.
Yeah.
And I'm excited about where we're headed.
Sheriff Dave Marshak from Jefferson County, how can people follow you?
I'm on Twitter.
Yeah.
Yep, I'm on Twitter and on Facebook, and always out there pushing good policing and support law enforcement.
He's a late
and
night.
Your Second Amendment
He's
rights.
A late night tweeter.
Yeah? Yeah. So am I, so I get it.
I know, I got one at like 1 o'clock in the morning. Like, what is he doing up? I'm trying to sleep.
It scares some of the staff at the office, like, uh-oh. Sheriff's on a rant, but no, I try to keep everything realistic, and let's approach our issues from a realistic standpoint.
And of course, southernarmory.com and Southern Armory on Facebook.
Yep.
Keep up with everything happening at Southern Armory and Aaron that way. All right, we are going to wrap up today's show. You missed anything, download the podcast on the radio.com app, and we'll see you back here next week for another edition of Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors on 97.1 FM Talk.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Radio and the Great Outdoors, 97.1 FM Talk. Well, the debate has already started off the air, so let's do this on the air.
Welcome back to Second Amendment Radio. Chad, I don't do this often. Good music today.
Hey, there you go.
I love that organ opening. I'm like, man, I feel like I'm in church. This is awesome.
That's right. So Chad Ellis, producer of The Stars, Aaron Tarlow, the owner of Southern Armory, Jefferson County Sheriff Dave Marshak, all in studio with us. I'm Tony Colombo. You are listening to Second Amendment Radio and The Great Outdoors. And what I wanted to get into, we got one more segment to go on today's show, is this new, there's a couple, we'll see if we have time to get to how many we can get to, but the one I want to talk about the most, it's probably getting the most press, is this new law that's being proposed in the city of St. Louis that would require gun store dealers, or gun dealers, to turn into police any failed background checks. Aaron is the owner of Southern Armory. Name is Aaron Tarlow, the owner. I almost said the owner of Southern Tarlow. That's not right at all. But anyway, you own a gun store.
I do.
What do you think of the idea of having to turn over to police anytime somebody fails a background check at your store?
There's a couple of things going on here, and we kind of talked about this off the air, but when ATF comes in and does an inspection, which happens every few years for a retail storefront, they actually get we keep a folder for denies. So everybody that gets approved, they go chronologically in order by date and time into a folder, and then if you get denied, it goes into a separate folder, and it's kept same thing, date and time. Mm-hmm. So, but the thing is, you know, we're putting that into the FBI system, so the FBI knows already when somebody's been denied. And it's funny because, you know, I can't prove this per se, but you know, I watched ATF do several inspections at Southern Armory, and they would count, right? And then they would go to their separate sheet and look to see, I guess, if that number matched the number that was in the folder, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And then since we number all of our other ones, you know, from whatever to whatever, they would pull like a three-month section, and they would know how many background checks we ran in that 3 months, and then they would look at those to see if those matched the same numbers. If not, they knew that there was a problem in the paperwork somewhere. So I've seen them take copies of our denieds before. And then they've looked at our NFA stuff too. So,
what do they do with it?
So right, and so that's kind of my point is what do they do with it? So my hope is that the ATF field office is putting
Aaron,
all that
let's
in.
Talk.
I know.
Let's talk.
Hey, I got my hopes.
So Sheriff, from a law enforcement standpoint, but at least from your standpoint, what do you think of the idea of gun stores having to call you guys every time somebody gets?
It's fluff. To me, it's fluff legislation,
okay.
Right? I mean, clearly the city of St. Louis has some violent issues. They need to address it. But I don't know that, my question is what's going to happen with this information, right? So you already document it. You already keep it. You transfer it to the ATF.
And the FBI's already got it.
The city of St. Louis, right? That information, through this legislation is going to direct that information to the St. Louis City Police Department that is dealing with record high homicides.
Yes.
They're down a couple of hundred officers at any given time.
Yeah.
You know, they're short on the road. They have other issues. My question is, what are they going to do with the information? You can gather all you want.
Right.
You know, but what is the police department going to do with that information? And I think, in terms of,
doesn't it in your mind,
it needs to, we need to address violence in this region.
Doesn't it continue to put the, it continues to just kind of paint the picture of
law enforcement's not doing their job.
The reason for gun violence is because of the gun dealer and because of the gun owners, and it's like they're always trying to put limitations on people trying to legally purchase guns. It's never, what are we going to do about the criminals?
Right.
It's part of the narrative. It's part of the narrative that guns are part of the problem. That's what this is, in my opinion. You know, we have a violence issue. Yes, we have a violent issue, violence issues in St. Louis City. But, you know, Jefferson County with, 230,000 people, I would definitely argue that based on our population and our demographics, there's more than 100,000 firearms in Jefferson County. Mm-hmm. And I think we've had one or two homicides this year. So
right.
it's not about firearms. I continue to stand by that. And I just don't feel that this legislation is really addressing some of those root causes. I think it's one more thing to put onto a police department that is already stressed,
right?
And that is already struggling to, you know, complete their primary mission.
It's feel-good, like you said, fluff. It's feel-good legislation that makes it look like you're doing something. But anybody with any kind of knowledge knows you're really not getting a whole lot of.
And my other question now, because, you know, they want us to report this, right? And they've already got the statistics from the FBI, and the FBI and the ATF are linked. So if the ATF really wanted to do this, they could see, hey, this person's been denied 8 times in the last week, 2 weeks, whatever. Maybe we should go have a conversation with them. But then, you know, the other people don't realize, too, if you buy more than 2 pistols in a week from the same dealer, really it's any dealer, but generally you don't know, you were just at another store and bought a gun, we have to do a multi-pistol sale. And then we send that to the sheriff or police chief of where they reside. So my question is, like, what do you do with that? Because I know we mail them to Jefferson County. I've got customers in Jefferson County that'll come in and buy a couple of them. My wife will go, hey, we're sending another one down to Sheriff Marshak. And I'll say, okay. And I've never had the thought to send you a text message like, hey, what do you do with these?
They flow into my office, and then they flow into a file cabinet.
The circular bin?
No. We maintain the file. But again, you have to be realistic, and that goes along with any legislation of how are you going to apply it.
Right.
I think it goes back to, you know, I see those files. They come through my desk in my stack of papers. They go to...
What do you guys do with them?
We have a person that files them.
Do you computerize them?
No.
Okay.
We don't have those resources.
Right.
And most people don't have extra resources just hanging out to do some of these things. We work on efficiency. We prioritize law enforcement issues, whether... the criminal investigations and calls for service are all prioritized. And, you know, this information coming in, when I look at it from leadership perspective, is what's the correlation between somebody getting rejected who, you know, went to a business, filled out the paperwork, accurately gave their information, and then now was denied. What's the correlation to them going to commit violence? And I haven't seen any real stats or validation that there's a correlation. In terms of how we prioritize our business, I think it would sit low on the totem pole.
So, and the other thing, too, is when you come in and, you know, there's yes and no questions for you who's never done a background check. It's called a 4473. You can Google it, ATF Form 4473, and it'll be yes and no questions. And, you know, the first question is this firearm for you? And if you select yes, then we'll continue to read the yes and no questions. If you select no, then we end the sale right there. And then, you know, other questions like, have you been dishonorably discharged? Are you a felon? Do you have a restraining order? And if you start clicking yes on those, we don't even run it. So it never becomes a deny in the aspect of we ran it through FBI and it got denied. So therefore, under, I guess, the bill they're proposing up here, you know, it would go in a separate folder of just not completed background checks, because we have our approves, we have our denieds, and we have our not completeds. And not completeds are ones that people answered, you know, the yes and no questions wrong, or the people that did the background check and then it expired out because they were like, we ran it, I want that gun, and then we ran it, we're like, you're approved, and then they're like, oh man, I don't know if it's that one, I'm going to come back tomorrow, and then they don't come back for, you know, 30 days and the background check's expired.
You know, and the argument here in the city of St. Louis is that, you know, it's going to somehow curb gun violence. I'm not a St. Louis City resident, so I don't have a huge dog in this fight, other than I haven't seen any correlation between those that have been denied, you know, lawful ownership of a firearm, and that those that are out committing crimes with firearms.
So
I don't believe it. I've worked up in North County for 3 years, many years ago, but the people that I was stopping with firearms weren't the ones that got rejected when they went to a store.
Right.
My thought would be, why don't we just vamp up the gun knowledge? Like, have it mandatory that you take classes to actually learn about guns,
But you're targeting the people who can legally possess them, not the ones who are prohibited possessors.
I mean, say if I did this for a high school, like Missouri high schools, if it's mandatory that you learn about firearms, firearm safety and all this.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, it's just like you had a firearm go off at a university and then kill somebody. You don't have those kind of incidents because you have
the knowledge
and you're not trying to,
and carry.
I'm going to hide my gun because my parents don't know I have it or something like that. It's more of, okay, we're embracing the guns as well as informing you about them.
So it's kind of like the anti-tobacco campaigns back
then. That stuff does help all the legal owners.
Yeah.
And it may cut down on accidents, like Chad just said.
And it may keep them where they keep the guns locked up.
It's not going to stop crime.
Right, yeah. But it may keep them where they're locked up. So now you're not getting cars, you know, cars broken into and firearms stolen. And I mean, you're still going to get cars broken into, but, you know, maybe the guns getting stolen get curved a little bit. But, yeah, I think you're just targeting the wrong people. And I don't know how to target the criminal.
Well, and education is never, I mean, we talk about that all the time.
Yeah, education
is never
bad
to have education.
This is groundbreaking. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm go for it.
We prosecute.
Oh, come on now.
The criminals. Listen, I know. This is a new concept. It's a new concept.
Lyda Crewson and Bell.
No names. Here's what I'm telling
you. No names.
That we hold people accountable for their decisions.
I agree.
Regardless of what city or county they're in,
well,
right?
I want to get your thoughts on one more piece of fluff legislation, and that is this: the other one that was sort of introduced at the same time as the bill that would make gun dealers turn in bad background checks. And that is the $100 fine if you carry a firearm in any city park.
Yeah.
And the idea, the alderman that proposed this said, our families need to know that there are safe places to go and gather and play. And so if we put a $100 fine on anybody carrying a firearm in a city park, that'll make city parks safe.
Couple things. A, I'd have to have an interaction with law enforcement, and that means that they have to be like called because there's some kind of reasonable suspicion that I've committed a crime, and then they'd have to search me and find the gun. But since I'm a law-abiding citizen and I don't, you know, interact with people per se, I would probably still carry in a park.
What do they not understand about criminals don't obey the rules?
And then the next thing is criminals don't obey the rules, so they don't care about $100 fine.
Do they know that? Do they know when an alderman says something like, we need to have safe places for our families to go, so we're going to make it illegal to carry in a city park, do they know? Do you think that they know that that's just total ridiculous crap that they're saying because bad guys don't follow the law and they just think that it's some fluffy good sound?
Good.
Or do they really think that that's going to stop crime? And we got like 1 minute. So,
my official response is,
right?
Come on.
I know.
Listen,
it's
not going to fix anything. Mm-hmm. Fluff legislation. I will tell you as we wrap something up real quick.
Mm-hmm.
I had a meeting with Senator Whelan yesterday. Good news. I really feel that the mood in the Capitol is not going to address some of this crazy legislation that some of the far left's going to be pushing this next session.
Yeah.
And I'm excited about where we're headed.
Sheriff Dave Marshak from Jefferson County, how can people follow you?
I'm on Twitter. I'm on Twitter and on Facebook, and always out there pushing good policing and support law enforcement.
He's a late
and
night.
Your Second Amendment
He's
rights.
A late night tweeter.
Yeah. So am I, so I get it.
I know. I got one at like 1 o'clock in the morning. Like, what is he doing up? I'm trying to sleep.
It scares some of the staff at the office, like, uh-oh. Sheriff's on a rant, but no, I try to keep everything realistic,
yeah.
You know,
yep.
And let's approach our issues from a realistic standpoint.
And of course, SouthernArmory.com and Southern Armory on Facebook.
Yep.
Keep up with everything happening at Southern Armory and Aaron that way. All right, we are going to wrap up today's show. You missed anything, download the podcast on the radio.com app, and we'll see you back here next week for another edition of Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors on 97.1 FM Talk.
Get more at 971talk.com.